Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Today's podcast is proudly sponsored by Eastern Kentucky University. EKU is now offering an online Bachelor of Science in Fire and Safety Engineering Technology degree program with a concentration in fire protection engineering. Our online format allows today's working professionals the flexibility to pursue the degree without much impact to their already busy lifestyles. Visit our website at firescience.eku.edu to learn more about obtaining the technical knowledge you need from a recognized leader in fire protection engineering with EKU, ranked by Forbes.com among America's best colleges.
Well, this month on Fire Marshal's Corner, we're going to be talking about residential sprinklers. There is a lot that's been happening in this whole arena since the vote in Minneapolis last September that required it to be part of the International Residential Code in new homes. And to talk about it, we have assembled a panel of experts in really looking into this and working on this whole thing day and night almost. We're going to be starting with Shane Ray, who's the Associate Director of Public Fire Protection for NFSA, and then Tom Leah, who's from the Executive Director of the Northern Illinois Fire Sprinkler Board, followed by Alan Perdue, who's the International Director for the IFC Fire and Life Safety Section, and then Gary Keith, who's the Vice President of Field Operations with the National Fire Protection Association. So really appreciate all you guys joining us today. And I think, like I said, start off with Shane, and maybe you can fill us in on what happened in Minneapolis that really started this whole ball rolling, and then what's been happening as a result of that across the country.
Thanks, Ed. In September of 2008, the fire service really stepped up its involvement in the codes process. The fire service has been involved, but probably not at the same level. So we joined with the building officials and representatives to implement into the body of the code the requirements for fire sprinklers in one and two family dwellings. And with the success coming out of Minneapolis to include that in the body of the code, which made it now part of the model codes in our country with NFPA codes requiring it in 2006, I believe, Gary.
Yes, that's right.
So now we have, the fire service has a new tool in our toolbox to use out across the country at the state and local levels to try to improve community fire protection. And so we were very happy with that. And I think leaving there, the fire service thought that we would have to defend this at a state level and even try to increase our education, increase awareness to the other stakeholders who might be affected by this, primarily the home builders, that we could do that across the country as we went forward with legislation to adopt the codes, and in those states that had rules-making process, to adopt the code without taking out the requirement for the fire sprinklers. But just as smoke alarms, we knew this would be a challenge. However, I don't think we estimated the fact that we would be on the defensive side of things. And that's what's come as a result of Minneapolis. The home builders across the country and some other interested stakeholders have started introducing legislation. And I believe we have about 15 states that we're aware of that's directly affected with some type of legislation that not only about sprinklers, but would remove the authority of local jurisdictions to adopt code, and that being very problematic to us. But one of the issues with that is that the fire chiefs and building officials have to cooperate at a local level to make this successful, and I think that's what we have to get across the country now. But we probably started out in Arizona and North Dakota with the first two bills that we became aware of, where the home builders introduced legislation that in those two particular states would make it so that local jurisdictions could not adopt any sprinkler requirements. And then it kind of spread from there that other states joined in. Some states went as far as to say that you couldn't. Texas was the first place, I believe we were aware, that introduced legislation that said local jurisdictions couldn't adopt codes more stringent than the state, which would essentially make those states a mini-max state where the local jurisdiction couldn't adopt more stringent. And there's 35 states, I believe, that are not mini-max, meaning that the local governments, like where we are in Tennessee, can adopt requirements stronger than the state. So, and we want to keep that home rule. I think that's one of the fire service should be a main focus of the fire service, is to maintain that. But as we go out across the country, we've had success in particularly Illinois, Maine, Idaho, Ohio, and I believe we'll see success in Alabama, where the fire service has worked hard to make sure that these laws did not pass. And so I think we'll continue to see some of that, but where that's happening, the fire service has taken a leadership role.
Now, some of the legislation that's being introduced at the state level, some of it is pretty bluntly, you know, it says no sprinklers, whereas other states are using other tactics, but, it, you know, it still would appear that sprinklers are at the root of it. I think Minnesota, didn't they just delay entire adoption of the code?
Yes, Minnesota was one, and they did delay it, and that's through their rulemaking process, but they also had legislation introduced that would limit local control as well. So,
and, I mean, that seems that, you know, you're taking the whole thing down over a sprinkler issue. I mean, by not adopting the next update to the code, that delays it by even another 3 years out, which impacts a whole host of issues besides sprinklers in terms of safety of the built environment, doesn't it?
Exactly, Ed, and that's the concern that the fire chiefs have to lead this issue. It is about community fire protection. It's not a single issue. It's about fire and life safety in the community, and that's why, as well, we need to work with the building officials, because like in the 09 code, there's a lot of energy conservation issues in there, as well as CO alarms. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to our communities, life safety, environmental, that we need to be concerned with.
And it's a firefighter safety issue as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's, you know, given that most of the fatal fires by a large margin occur in the residential environment, it seems that this is an important change that will really protect that environment. And I think the important thing to point out, too, is this is all for new construction, isn't it? It's not retroactive to existing construction, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Well, as Shane mentioned, you know, Illinois waged a battle against that code up there, and we have Tom Leah, who's the executive director of the Northern Illinois Fire Sprinkler Board. Tom, can you fill us in a little bit on what happened there in Illinois?
Sure, Ed. I'd just like to give a little background first, though. Early on, we had to build a lot of foundations and develop coalitions with many groups. The fire service itself really wasn't together at first also. We had inspectors groups, education groups, the chiefs, the metro chiefs, the volunteers. And we had to get those groups together and also educate them. And one of the ways that Illinois did that in the beginning was to form the Illinois Fire Services Association so that they could speak with one voice when necessary. Education was something that we couldn't even have begun to respond to any of these statewide codes until we had educated the fire service. So what we did, we worked extensively with the fire service, and they worked with us also on basic education, whether that was a fire sprinkler demonstration trailer or a side-by-side burn demonstration or demo houses. And we've done hundreds of trailer demos throughout the state, and we've also done about 230 side-by-side burns over the last 9 years. So there's been a lot of basic research and support to the fire department so that they could get themselves up to speed. And then we did something early on, too, to keep the fire service up to speed, and we started what we call NFPA 13D meetings or summits for any of the municipalities or fire districts that had adopted codes. We tried to get them together so that if they had any type of problem or any issues with fire sprinkler installations or contractors or whatever it may have been with the general public, as to educate them. We started out with maybe a group of five towns, and that was over 7 years ago. And every year it just grew and grew, and we invited the building officials also, because our building officials have to be on board with us also, and we need to develop that type of support. So, you know, we had great support from NFPA, and I'd like to say we had Russ Sanders and James Lake, Chris Dubay, and Gary Keith, Jim Shannon out there, Ozzie Murkaw. And recently, at different ones that we had, we just joined with Fire Team USA for one of the most successful ones that we ever had. And we're really happy to have had that cooperation with Fire Team USA. So our basis was we needed to educate everybody first so that they knew what they were fighting for. And that was basically the start of our anti-fire sprinkler defense, if you wanted to call it that. We worked hard with the IRC then, as Shane was saying, and the NFSA with the IRC vote. And I think that helped educate a lot of the chiefs. They didn't understand that. So those alliances helped us when we were there. And I just like to say, too, we couldn't have done any of our education without the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition education material, or even now with NFPA's new fire sprinkler initiative that I believe Gary will be talking about. And one thing I'd like to mention, you think that you have everybody on board, but what we found out is that do not take anything for granted. I can assure you that the vast majority of our Illinois Fire Service people, even now, do not know enough about residential fire sprinklers. So we are real happy that NFSA and the International Association of Fire Chiefs joined together for that playbook for residential book. That goes to every chief, so they have that in their background also. And then just getting, as we prepared for what we thought was going to happen, the chiefs' groups, the fire districts, the fire inspectors, the fire sprinkler people, the labor, the non-labor, NFPA, NFSA, and our state fire marshal were all on alert for what we thought was going to happen. But we basically had to let the first punch hit. I think maybe if we can come up with a way to stop these bills from coming in, that would be better. But we had to take the first punch, and we found out really what was going to happen on, I believe it was the 16th of this year, when we got a notice from the Attainable Housing Alliance and the Home Builders Association, and they sent this out to their members that the builder, they wanted to fight for a code in Illinois where the builder may use the most recent version of the International Residential Code as their default code if they choose to do so. Because of the new requirements located in the 2009 IRC, like mandatory sprinkler systems, and the manner in which the code was passed, we are amending the International Residential Code at the state level so that the default code is the 2006 IRC without amendments and without appendices. So they were a little upset, that, as they felt, by the way the code was passed, and they wanted to limit anything that mentioned fire sprinklers. So that was our first notice. And then the second one, we got a good bulletin from the International Association of Fire Chiefs. And I think it was titled, Home Builders Trying to Preempt the Adoption of State and Local Sprinkler Regulations. That came out, that really helped us out by getting that notice. And that was followed up by a special alert from Russ Sanders at NFPA, who managed to contact with all his other email lists a lot of the chiefs that were not members of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. So we then knew what happened at North Dakota, and we knew what happened in Arizona. And as our executive director of the Illinois Fire Inspectors, George McHale, said, let the games begin. And then Bob Hughes, the executive director of the Illinois Fire Chiefs, we are on it. So we felt we had a handle on it, got all the association lobbyists and everybody notified about the bills. And then basically we just went back to the grassroots. We thought we were ready, and we weren't. We really didn't have all the committee members that were on the committee. We didn't know who they were, so we had to do that basic data research. And we developed an email and letter campaign to all the state reps and state senators in conjunction with all the Illinois chiefs and the inspectors in their respective towns and fire districts. And then the big bill that came out was sponsored by a Senator Brady. His family owns a home building business. And the bill would specifically prohibit a county or a municipality from adopting a residential fire sprinkler ordinance. So we had to take it from the grassroots at that point. The letter writing campaign was the big key. And the other item was the emails, the phone calls, and a personal visit by the chief in that district to the specific senator that was in his area. We found that was the most effective way. They respected the fact that was one of their constituents and that they came out to basically fight the bill. Now, being Illinois, as you know, we have to do things some differently sometimes, and we found out that the senator was not going to, we wanted to stop the bill from going, even being called, and then he's going to call the bill. So what we did, we had some good media contacts with some of the Chicago media, and we asked one of our friends from the media, Phil Rogers, to interview the and find out about his background being a home builder and something that he was recommending that to eliminate fire sprinklers. So we had a live interview on NBC5. The fire service was involved, so they were free and clear of that. And it basically called out the senator for being a home builder and also, you know, having a conflict of interest. So after that was aired, the senator changed the bill before the committee came out. And then during the committee, basically what they did then, what they tried to say that it would, they wanted to prohibit you from adopting any type of code, whether it was the NFPA code or the ICC codes. You had to separately vote on the residential fire sprinkler issues. So that was his amendment. He thought that that would pass. But that still did not make it through. So we were real happy for that. I would just like to go back to the fact that I recommend the strongest possible use of the NFPA Fire Sprinkler Initiative, which I know Gary's going to be talking about, in conjunction with all the educational resources from HFSC, because when you're having to talk about issues or the fire marshals or the fire inspectors, you all need to be talking from one data source or one database. If quoting numbers or saves or injuries or deaths, we hope that everybody's talking on the same page and that the information that is provided to the senators is provided at the same time. My only recommendation is that the fire service treat it like a fire incident plan or pre-plan. We're complete with a flowchart resources and data sources where you have your game plan down before any type of issue like this comes out. And I could say, honestly, I believe that we thought we were ready, but we weren't. We did a lot of scrambling. There was many, many chiefs spent long days on the phone and emails with all their constituents. So we could have been a little bit better prepared, but I believe the key was stopping it at the committee level before they even called for the vote. And my only other recommendation is we need to take our education level that we give to our municipalities and fire district trustees and take it to the state reps and state senators. Maybe each individual fire chief or fire district in that district could host a side-by-side burn demonstration at the firehouse in the district when the senator's home for the break or whenever they have the break, and use the HFSC new material that they developed. Invite them for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and conduct a burn demo from them. I can assure you they do not know what flashover is, they do not know how a sprinkler operates, and they don't know how to tie in the fact of the timeline for the fire department response time. So to me, I just think I'd like to go back to the basics. We got hit by three bills. One of them would say no, adopt a statewide building code. All of the ICC codes were mentioned except for the IRC. That was in another bill, and that's the bill that I talked about where they wanted to limit any mention of adopting the Appendix P or making any amendments to it. And the big bill that we fought was the one that would prohibit a county or municipality from adopting any type of residential bill, which was amended calling for a separate vote, at which all three of them were defeated. It could not have been done if they got into the committee and passed through the committee through the full vote to either the House or the Senate, we would have had a much more difficult time. So timing is very important, striking early during the committee or before the committee vote, and basically those would be my recommendations.
Now, one of the things that comes to mind, you're mentioning time. I'm curious as to how much time you had. I mean, you did a lot in the time between when it was introduced and when it was finally killed. How much time was that?
You're only talking about a matter of days. I believe there was...
Really?
Right. By the time the one bill was posted. So we had to act quickly before it went to the committee vote.
Mm-hmm.
And part of... We were a little bit lucky in Illinois at this time due to the fact that the unions and the Democratic Party now are tied directly together. So the fire service's contacts with the unions and with the Democratic Party helped greatly. and they responded to those overtures from labor and from the fire service. But once it got, if it got to that stage, like I said, if it got past the committee, it'd be much more difficult to stop. And then now you're talking about going to the governor level to stop things from happening.
Shane, looking at some what's going on in some other states in the country, you know, do you have a sense of what they're doing? Are they doing things similar to what Tom was just talking about in Illinois, or and are there different tactics being used to try to combat these things?
Well, there's a lot of different tactics going on, but what Tom is describing with that grassroots level, letter writing and phone calling, and most of all, ascending on the hill. I know Alabama fire chiefs have been on the hill. They have a chief on the hill day every week, I believe. But they're there constantly in monitor of this bill and following it. So those are the things. And then Tom said a key thing there with the union. Some of the states where we're not as successful is where the unions remain in neutral. If the IFF remains neutral, it divides the fire service, and that's been a concern for us in some of those other states.
And you're correct, Shane. The fire service, the firemen's organizations jumped in. The firefighter unions supported the whole effort. And that made a big difference to a lot of the state reps and state senators also. The chiefs and the unions together, the chiefs and the firefighters together did it.
Yep. Okay. Well, we're going to just take a short break here, and then we're going to pick it up right after the break and start talking to Alan Perdue from the National Association of Fire Chiefs and Gary Keith from NFPA. So we'll be right back right after this break.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Today's podcast is proudly sponsored by Eastern Kentucky University. EKU is now offering an online Bachelor of Science in Fire and Safety Engineering Technology degree program with a concentration in fire protection engineering. Our online format allows today's working professionals the flexibility to pursue the degree without much impact to their already busy lifestyles. Visit our website at firescience.eku.edu to learn more about obtaining the technical knowledge you need from a recognized leader in fire protection engineering with EKU, ranked by Forbes.com among America's best colleges.
Okay, well, welcome back to Fire Marshal's Corner. We've been talking about the residential sprinklers issues that are going on across the country at the state level. And joining us now is Alan Perdue, who's the International Director from the IFC Fire and Life Safety Section. And Alan, you and I have been having some discussions on this over the past few days, most notably at the Congressional Fire Services Institute dinner, where they're doing a lot there on the national level, and you were talking about how that same model could be used on the state level with the fire chiefs. Think you could just expand on that a little bit?
Sure, Ed, and thank you for allowing us to be here today. This whole debate reminds me of a quote I heard one time that said, we have a Bill of Rights. What we need is a Bill of Responsibilities. And I think that's something that's been left out of this entire concept, and the fire service has an opportunity to bring this back into focus. There's never been a more important time for the fire service to get involved, and that's whether you're a career volunteer, a rookie firefighter, or chief of the department. We have to educate ourselves on the issues and provide a clear and succinct message to our elected officials. It's vital that we have visibility within the halls of legislative buildings across each state. One of the things we looked at is last week at CFSI is duplicating that process. We do a real good job once a year in Washington, D.C., but we could take that same concept to each state and local platform where it includes every fire-related agency from your state to bring the elected officials into the conversation of what's going on. If we as a fire service fail to become engaged in these current issues that's being played out in the political arena across America, we're going to have significant negative implications for the fire service, and we know that we're going to lose more lives and more property than we have in the past. So what we're trying to get out to our chiefs and fire service members across the state is number one, get engaged, be involved. There's a significant amount of resources available to assist everyone, and some of those have been mentioned, and some additional resources are in the process of being developed. And I think Gary's going to follow up with some things that FPA's done. The IFC's Fire and Life Safety Section website has a lot of information and links to things. The RC Fire Sprinkler Coalition has information for the fire chiefs. So the information's out there. What we need is every fire service member to get involved. The other thing that's important with this is about relationships with elected officials. There's three things every community has: a post office, an elected official, and a fire chief. And that local fire chief can do so much to help bring awareness to his elected official. You know, the fire service is one of the most trusted professions in the world, and we need to utilize that honor to ensure our elected officials know what our mission is, and that mission is to save lives and property. And we have an opportunity to enhance the built environment within our communities, and we need to maximize that.
Do you find that a lot of fire chiefs probably aren't used to working on the state level like you're talking about? You know, they're so focused on their local level, it's oftentimes they may not be thinking about the kind of role they can play at the state level.
I think so. I think, you know, one of the issues is that that people feel that, I can't make a difference, and that's far from the truth. You know, there's everything you do counts, and every chief, no matter how large or small their department is, sharing that same message from America's Fire Service that we need to enhance the built environment. We need to the home rule issue of building our community based on what our resources are to serve the people is important. And you know, it's kind of unique that when the fire service is confronted with a daunting task that most people would walk away from, we have a can-do spirit that says, you know, give me that task, I'm all over it. But we need them to get all over this issue and join us, and let's get folks engaged in the political process, because that's what's going to make a difference.
I mean, Tom, you were talking about that a lot of education had to happen with the fire chiefs. Did you find that kind of attitude, that they certainly wanted to do something, but they just, you know, well, who am I? I'm just, you know, one little fire chief here, and they're not used to working on the bigger stage. Did you find that sort of thing happening?
Exactly. The chiefs are great at working at the local level. When they're inspired and motivated to do something on the local level, they can do it when they make their mind up. As they move up the chiefs' organizations or the fire inspectors' organizations in Illinois, that's their really first taste of statewide issues. And they may have never even contacted their state rep or state senator before that. So as they move up the ranks and through the chiefs' organization, they get exposed to that. But that's a limited number of fire chiefs. So I could just see something is needed to expand that, where they really learn to meet their state rep and their state senator and their district to become the person, the point person for education or fire safety education, or the answer person, basically.
And one of the things, too, that I remember that was one of the seminar discussions down at CFSI was, it's always helpful to go see your rep before you need something, you know, to build that relationship. And
exactly.
You know, and I think, Alan, you probably saw that down there in D.C. where all the chiefs are always on the Hill. It's always good to have that relationship in advance so that when you do need something, you know, you're not a stranger knocking on the door, are you?
That's exactly right. It's again, like I said, it's about relationships and them being able to recognize that's my fire chief, and every one of them have a fire chief. And the question is, do they know who you are? And if they don't, you need to make a special effort to get to know those individuals. They want to hear from you, and do that before, like you said, we need something at the 11th hour.
And I think it was like Tom said earlier. I believe, you know, kind of use this as an incident command sort of structure. That's not the time when you want to be meeting the property owners or the HJs or people like that. You want to make those relationships before the incident happens. And it's probably just very similar with this kind of event as well.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. I'd like to turn to Gary Keith, who's the Vice President of Field Ops at NFPA. NFPA has really been stepping to the forefront on this in terms of providing a lot of resources and coordination through its new website. And Gary, think you can talk to us a little bit about what NFPA is doing and how we can help the fire chiefs out there and the firefighters in putting together this attack.
Sure, Ed, and thanks for inviting us. And let me go back and give a little bit of background on how we got to this point. This effort really comes from two different directions, one being the fact that we've been out in front on as an advocate for sprinklers even before the sprinkler provision was even in our codes. Shane mentioned being included in the 2006 edition of our model codes, and we were out there supporting many of the local ordinances that were developed and were in process even prior to the provision being in there, which is a little dicey for us, admittedly, but we felt the issue wasn't important enough for us to be doing that. And then the second front really came from an extension of our success with the Fire Safe Cigarette Coalition and a lot of the partners that we worked with on that effort. And as that effort draws to completion, and thankfully it's gone faster than we thought it would, we stepped back and said, well, what's next for us? You know, advocacy is an important issue for NFPA. What should we be accomplishing? And so we decided about a year and a half ago to run a series of focus groups with the fire service across the country. We did eight of them, and very interesting experiment because after about 30 seconds of each focus group that we did, the conclusion was NFPA ought to be focused on residential sprinklers, and we agreed with that. And so last fall, and then after the first of the new year, we launched this effort on the Fire Sprinkler Initiative, Bringing Safety Home. And the goal of it was and is to arm all our advocates, the fire service and other folks interested in this issue, with the resources they need. And primarily it was going to be viewed as an offensive strategy. And as each of the speakers has talked about before, we quickly got into a defensive strategy, and we've adjusted the initiative accordingly. If you look at our website, which is firesprinklerinitiative.org, you'll see a whole host of featured resources and news items. We're taking advantage of the viral technology with blogs and with RSS feeds and with LinkedIn and YouTube and any other of those technologies where people can get information. And as I said, we focused on the offensive strategies in terms of arming people with the information they need to initiate ordinances or even activity at the state level if that opportunity presents itself. But once these bills started surfacing in these other states, we responded to that by including a big area of our website on legislative alert and showed copies, links to the bills, links back to the listings in each of the states where we were under attack, a listing of the senators and the representatives in each of those states so our advocates could correspond directly with their particular representative or state senator on the issue. And that seems to have been very successful in getting communication from the grassroots effort back to the particular House and Senate where the issue was being debated. So a big part of this whole effort is communication. I think that's been the success. While we've been under attack and while we know, at least in North Dakota, there is a bill sitting on the governor's desk waiting for signature, nothing has been finalized yet. We've had more success in defeating these efforts so far than the other side has had in passing some of these bills that have popped up. I don't mean to be naive enough to think that before each of these legislative sessions close that some of them may prove to be successful, unfortunately, but so far we've been able to fight the good fight, and I think having these resources available for folks and that we can use it, our website as a clearinghouse, everybody's got a lot of resources, and as I think Tom mentioned, we want to make sure that we're singing from the same sheet of music and making sure that we're consistent in our message, and I think the resources that we put through our website help do that. The other issue I want to make sure folks are aware of is the field support that we'll put into place through this initiative. We've always maintained a strong support of field staff on code issues, and this obviously is no exception. And the commitment NFPA has made to the fire service and our advocates on this issue is when it comes to sprinklers and this, particularly the sprinkler provision in new homes, we could care less what's being adopted. We don't care if it's a reference to the NFPA code. We don't care if it's a reference to the IRC. We don't care if it's a standalone ordinance. We will be there in support of that. And, you know, we'll make sure we're at the mic supporting that and testifying on behalf of this at any level, whether that's a local, whether whether it's a county or whether it's a state, and that's a commitment that we've made to this whole initiative. Some of the other things that we've put together, NFPA sponsored the Fire Protection Research Foundation project that occurred last year on the cost study of residential sprinklers. It was a national study and also included one community in Canada. We've affectionately been calling this the $1.61 report, and I know our advocates have been making strong use of this, that showed that the average cost per sprinkler square foot in the projects that we looked at across the country was $1.61, which is pretty good and within the target range that we've been talking about for years. We have two other studies that are underway that NFPA is sponsoring to help in this effort. One is going to look at the whole water supply issue. We're looking at 20 communities that have passed residential sprinkler ordinances and looking at the water supply requirements. We hear a lot of anecdotal concerns about water supply requirements in communities, so we're going to actually look at what occurred during the adoption of a sprinkler ordinance to the water supply regulations. You know, were they anti-sprinkler pre-ordinance and then got adjusted appropriately during the ordinance, and how does that all shake out? So we're going to put that report together, and then we're doing another report on looking at housing starts in comparable communities at the county level, two large counties that don't have sprinkler ordinances and two that do that are comparable, and looking at trying to make a case, hopefully, that the fact that an ordinance existed in the two counties that had a sprinkler requirement did not negatively impact housing starts in the unsprinkled communities, and so that report will also be available later this year. As Tom mentioned, I believe we use a lot of the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition materials as part of this initiative and our educational message. The difference being that we now layer up on top of that, since HFSC is all about education, pure education, and doesn't get into the ordinance issue, we're now layering the importance of mandated requirements on top of the educational message that HFSC has been supporting for many years.
Now, all of this is available through the website, the new website you guys have created, right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And what's that URL again?
That's firesprinklerinitiative.org.
Now, one of the things that all that you've been talking about is the resources to provide to the chiefs and to help them all sing off the same sheet and everything else. But it's also kind of a two-way street, too, because some of the stuff's just popping up out of the blue, and I think one of them was Ohio, wasn't it? Didn't that come up very quickly and also get killed very quickly?
Yeah, it was an amendment to a transportation bill of all things, and it surfaced within a 24-hour period. It had surfaced and had been squelched, and being able to respond to these very quickly is obviously beneficial.
It's also important that the chiefs get the message up the pipeline that, you know,
correct,
this is happening, because as much as, you know, you're out there and everybody else is out there, there's just so much going on.
And again, as we saw with that bill and in a couple other places where it's being attached to, Shane mentioned, energy bill issues, you never know where it's going to pop up or be attached to, and so you've got to have your antenna up for most everything.
I'm going to kind of throw this out to the whole group. I mean, everybody's really focused on what's happening now, and I think it'd be naive to think that once you win these battles, that the battle is done. I'm sure that there are going to be other tactics used coming down the road. You guys have anything that you're seeing in your crystal balls as to what we might have to arm ourselves for in the future?
In Illinois, they're looking to have any community give a 30-day notice before they change a code, and that will allow the anti-forces enough time to go to a board meeting to oppose it. That's what we're seeing there right now.
And I think on this, Shane, on the offensive end, I know there's areas where the fire service is looking at the issue of firefighter safety and what kind of provisions can the fire service introduce legislation that strengthens the fire service and firefighter safety issues. So, again, for the fire service to go on the offense instead of the defense.
I also think, Ed, that we'll probably see an attack on the model codes. I don't know whether or not we'll see a proposal come through for the NFPA codes, but I can almost guarantee you that there'll be a proposal come through for the next edition of the IRC to take that provision out.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there's going to have to be a defense maintained to make sure that we maintain the provision in each of the model codes.
I think it's one of those things that we just have to maintain constant vigilance, don't we, in terms of, you know, we can't sit in our laurels thinking that, well, we got it licked here, and just keep our eyes out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, once the legislative session ends in some of these states, I think hopefully we can go back on the offensive, you know, not only at the state level, but back at the local level as well. We know that there's, you know, a number of communities across the country that had been talking about filing initiatives and haven't because of some of these things that have been going on at the state level. Once the dust settles on some of these, perhaps we can get back into the mode of increasing the number of communities that have these ordinances and start to move ahead in that direction, which was the ultimate objective to begin with. And even in some of the mini-MAC states where we don't have the ability to adopt local ordinances, several of those states, we're working with state-level committees that have studies underway right now to perhaps come up with some sort of statewide recommendation at some point. Again, don't necessarily think that's going to happen overnight, but at least the discussion is going on in some of those states.
Well, we've been talking about what's been going on across the country with the residential sprinkler code requirements that were adopted in the International Residential Code last September in Minneapolis. And what has happened is that efforts have been mounted on the state levels and the various legislatures to preempt the requirement for residential sprinklers. And a strong initiative has been put forward by a number of organizations all working together. And we've had a few folks here who are very knowledgeable and kind of on the forefront of all this talking with us. We've had Shane Ray, who's the Associate Director of Public Fire Protection at NFSA, Tom Leah, who's the Executive Director of the Northern Illinois Fire Sprinkler Board, Alan Perdue, who's the International Director from the IFC Fire and Life Safety Section, and Gary Keith, who's Vice President of Field Operations at NFPA. And they've been talking about a wealth of resources that are out there for any of the fire chiefs or anybody working at the local level. It's available through the NFPA's new website, and we have a link to that on the page here below. And we'll have some links to some other resources. So, gentlemen, really appreciate you taking the time to join us and fill us in on this. It certainly is a battle that everybody's coming together and facing. And you've given us a wealth of information, so we appreciate you joining us today here on Fire Marshal's Corner. My name is Ed Kamau.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.